Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Speedy Digest, as we have an awesome show lined up for us tonight. And before we get over into our news topic, I'm going to ask Joseph and Glenn how he's been doing, and we'll toss it over to Kyle, as he just called in as well. So how are you guys doing that since we last spoke?
Pretty good.
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Not bad.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Kyle?
I'm doing well. I know it's a busy night for you, doing double duty here.
I am. So I guess since we're all ready to go, I'll hit the first news topic of the night. And that was, it was announced today that Chris Sabota will now move to NBC over from Fox Sports 1, where she really did a good job over there with all the pre-race stuff. But I'm going to ask you guys, what are your thoughts on it? And also on a side note, she's also going to do some Olympic coverage. So interesting. I'm going to start off with Glenn.
I am shocked because I've enjoyed Chris Sabota during the Truck Series races, and she's always been in our household. You know, even when Speed Channel was, or even when Fox Sports 1 was Speed Channel. But I'm glad that she'll be moving over to NBC because now the Cup Series races, as well as a few nationwide races, are going to start to feel like a Camping World Truck Series race, especially when you have Chris Sabota possibly doing free show and even the pit road, and you have Rick Allen up there in the booth. So I think it's good for her.
Joseph.
Yeah, I was pretty shocked too, to say the least, but I know that Fox is making a lot of changes. Bob Filner will not be returning in 2015, and they're just going through a different phase right now. I think they're trying to go in a younger direction, sort of, with all these new people that they hired over the last year. So I think it's a good thing. It's going to be interesting to see Fox's official lineup for NASCAR next year. But either way, it's going to be fantastic as usual.
Kyle.
Yeah, I think it's a good move for NBC. And, of course, with ESPN and TNT going away this year, it's really a good move. I mean, it's been a good week for all reporters as well. You know, along with Chris Sabota, also Brad Doherty staying at ESPN and going to the NBA side. And then, of course, with Marty Smith and him expanding his coverage as well. So I think it's been a good week for all reporters. But, yeah, definitely for Chris Sabota, just going to stay in that with the NASCAR media. And, of course, with also being announced for NBC that Marty Smith, and I think her name is Kelly, actually, I forget her name, but I know she's going to, yeah. I know. Mm-hmm. So I think NBC has a really good lineup next year. And then and another thing I want to bring up, and I know I think Glenn brought it up, was NBC on, or excuse me, NASCAR on Fox, the truck races next year. And I'm still wondering, at least for that group, who will be calling all the races into 2015.
It's going to be interesting as well of who's going to be calling the races over there. And, you know, Fox Sports has done a great job, but I think, you know, NBC's going to be having a spectacular coverage with all the people they've been adding here lately. So next on the board of discussion is Alex Bowman gets another deal with JR Motorsports to run at Penny, get sponsorship from Line-X in a one-off deal. So, first of all, I'm going to start with Joseph, NASCAR Joe, which is his nickname, to give us his thoughts.
Hi, Brett. You're lucky it's Game 7 of World Series. Otherwise, I'll be harsh on you. But yeah, Alex Bowman, this is a very good deal for him. I think that if he doesn't perform in this race, he's in trouble because it is a contract year for Alex Bowman of BK Racing. According to the team owner, Ron Devine, he does want Alex to return for next year, and the team does have an announcement tomorrow, which they're expected to announce at least one of their drivers for next year, if not both of them. But in the Nationwide Series, he did rush up a little bit. He only had one full-time year of RAB racing. He did run a race with Vettori this year in Dover, and then he ran the event at Charlotte JR Motorsports. He didn't do as well as he planned, though. He was fast in practice, yes, but he finished 12th. 12th is not what you want when you're trying to impress people on a one-off race when you're a Sprint Cup Series driver. However, I think he's going to do better than this weekend. Well, in Phoenix, it's a track that he did well at with RAB Racing, and it's just somewhere that he excels at. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he could do, and who knows, it might lead to something more for next year.
Kyle.
Yeah, we haven't seen a Linex sponsored vehicle in a long time, because what I remember the last time Linex sponsored something, it was with Travis Quaffle in the NASCAR at the time, the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series in 2004. So actually picked up Toyota's first win as well in that series. So definitely, I think it's a good move for Junior Motorsports and Alex Bowman. I mean, like Joseph said, didn't have the result he wanted, but he was quick in practice at Charlotte, and he gets a good run on Phoenix. I mean, definitely has a chance. I mean, he has the speed. He just needs to show it during the race. I'm not really sure what happened in the Charlotte race a couple weeks ago, but I think he gets better opportunities to really show what he has.
Glenn?
Oh, I'm excited to see Alex Bowman again at Phoenix. I mean, you know, as we mentioned, right off around the truck, he was fast in practice and then just didn't really get the result that he was looking for in the actual race. But I think that if Alex Bowman does well enough at Phoenix, I would say maybe top 10 or better, then I have a feeling that Bowman could be the next driver to sign the JR Motorsports in 2015.
I think it's a good deal for him as well, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how he's going to do next year and see where this is going to take him. You know, I think it's going to spark his career up a lot, so, you know, I think Alex Bowman's a good kid, and he deserves every bit of this opportunity going into next week at Phoenix. All right, now we're going to get into a Martinsville race review as we wait for Patrick Star Pulley to call in. And we're going to start off with the NASCAR King World Truck Series, where Darrell Wallace Jr. captured his fourth career victory this past weekend after leading 97 laps of the race. It was a very interesting race as well. You know, Cole Custer, who was one of the drivers that came into the event as a favorite to win, got in some issues with his brakes and later on had an engine problem that caused him to finish 29th. And then we saw some other big crashes involving John West Townley and some other numerous drivers as well. And, you know, I thought it was a great win for Darrell Wallace Jr. And also driving that number 34 Wendell Scott tribute car, truck, rather. So I thought he did pretty good. What did you guys think of the race if you guys watched it? I'm just going to let you kind of hang loose on this, and y'all can step in whenever you want to talk about it.
Yeah, I think the story, of course, with Darrell Wallace Jr. winning in the Wendell Scott truck, I think that just that triumphs everything. And just so much action in that race. I mean, I was at a racetrack that day, but I did follow it along. And just so much action at Martinsville, pretty much what you normally see. And, of course, there was some disappointed people at the end of the race, including one Johnny Sauter. I think he was getting bumped around a little bit, but that's Martinsville. I mean, you got to do the bump and run sometimes. And at the end of the day, it was Darrell Wallace Jr. out in victory lane. And guys, I tell you what, I still think he's still in the championship hunt. I mean, Matt Crafton is not bobbled at all. But these next 3 weeks with Crafton, Ryan Blaney, and, of course, Darrell Wallace Jr. is going to be interesting for sure.
Okay. Joseph? Go ahead.
So, this race is pretty exciting. I thought it had a ton of action. He had a lot of rookies in the race. And he had a guy like Matt Tiff, Alex Gwinnett. Who else was in there? Peyton Sellers was making a rare start in the Truck Series. inexperience in the field, to say the least. And I think the craziest incident of the day was John Mazzucchelli's wreck, where he just cut in front of someone. Brandon Jones went flying right into the wall. One of the hardest wrecks I have ever seen in Martinsville. But then it was just a great race overall. Darrell Wallace Jr. dominated, led 97 laps on the day. I thought Timothy Peters was going to give him something at the end, though. He had a very strong truck all day long. He was in the top five, and it looked like he was just saving his stuff. The tough break for Johnny Sauter, though, he was running inside the top five and ended up finishing seventh, which basically blew any chance he had at coming back to win the title. Even if he wins the next three races, it's going to be very, very difficult for him to get ahead of anyone that's in front of him in points, because they're all running inside the top five on a weekly basis. Right now, Matt Crafton leads the points by a couple of markers, about 18 over Ryan Blaney. Darrell Wallace Jr. is within striking distance, yeah. He has the most wins in the series this year. He only has 8 top fives compared to Crafton's 11 and Ryan Blaney's 10. So it's going to come down to Crafton and Ryan Blaney. And Blaney wants to go out on top, I'm assuming, since he's going in Nationwide and Cup Series next year. So I'm looking forward to the next three races and seeing what's going to happen.
Glenn?
You know what? I need to give a call to Matt Kraft in the Truck Series race. I mean, he was up there leading for a little bit and then got shoved back in the field a little bit because he was involved in an accident and he came back to finish first, so that was really good for him. But, yeah, that whole deal with Johnny Sauter and Timothy Peters, I'm still trying to piece the puzzle together. I mean, I don't know what happened there or, you know, what went wrong. But, yeah, truck race is fine. But I also want to give another shout out to John Hunter Nemechek. Great recovery after getting into a little fizzy in the middle of the race, ended up finishing 13th. I mean, you know, John Hunter Nemechek is so underrated in our discussions. And if next year that team can just get some steady sponsorship and some better trucks, we're gonna be starting to talk about John Hunter Nemechek a hell of a lot more.
And I thought it was a good race, too. And Martinsville is certainly one of my favorite racetracks to watch throughout the year. And Patrick hasn't joined us yet on the show yet, or on the switchboard. So we're going to go right into our Sprint Cup Series race review. For the Goody's Headache Relief Shot 500, Dylan Hart Jr. captured the win after leading 79 laps of the 500 during the afternoon. And finally it happened. And we kind of talked about last week, when is the first driver going to break the barrier where they're not racing for a championship? It finally happened this past weekend. And, he held off his teammate Jeff Gordon, who is still locked into the chase. And a lot of upset fans about that, but Dale Jr. said that, you know, it was for a win, so the win mattered more. And then Ryan Newman came home with a surprising third-place finish during the day. So it was an interesting race, and there was a bunch of cautions during this race. But the one that probably got the most interest was when Brian Vickers and Casey Kane got into one another and was eventually warned by NASCAR. And then you had the second to the last accident on that 438 that involved a numerous amount of cars, including Brad Keselowski, Casey Kane, and Danica Patrick. That was one of the bigger ones throughout the day. So, I'm going to send it over and starting with Glenn to give us his thoughts on the race if he was able to watch it.
Yeah, I was able to watch it, and just like every fan of Jeff Gordon and Dale Earnhardt Jr., you were very conflicted on to who to root for. I mean, you certainly wanted Jeff Gordon to get a free pass to go into the chase, but then you had Dale Earnhardt Jr. up there So there was a major conflict there. I mean, it's fair that you see my username up there running 12-2488. But, you know, it's good for Dalen Hunt Jr., but I'm a little worried about Jeff Gordon because, you know, Texas, as it got coming up, and I'll say it again, has not been the best track for him. So kind of wish that he got the pass, but, you know, still pretty good for Dalen Hunt Jr. All in all, the race was not too bad, but I'll tell you one thing. The Vicker, probably the second best or the best, deal the race was the whole Vickers Kane bit, and seeing Kevin Harvick race a Lunar Warrior car with, you know, no nose, a modified, that was actually kind of interesting. But yeah, the Vickers Kane deal, boy, if NASCAR hadn't stepped in, I think both of them would have wrecked each other and then taken it to the house or something.
And our guest is on the line, so I'm going to turn it over to Joseph to introduce him, and we'll pass it around for questions. So take away, NASCAR Joe or Joseph.
Hi, Patrick. How are you?
Hey, guys. How you doing tonight?
We're doing great. Thank you for coming on last minute. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, man. I was excited to be on the show. Glad I got an invite to come hang out with you guys tonight.
Sounds good. Now, you've had a very busy year. As people know, you go to school, you became an intern for Michael Waltrip Racing, and you race. How different has your life been since you won the Peak Stock Car Dream Challenge?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of summed it up right there. Everything that I thought I would be doing this time this year is basically completely the opposite of how it's turned out. You know, the Peak Challenge gave me an awesome opportunity to get my foot in the door in NASCAR, go out there, win a race with Bill McAnally in the K&N series, really turn a lot of heads and get people to notice, you know, the kind of the career I've had, which has been mostly just in Florida and on the side from you know, the main priority, which was school. And, you know, now I'm living full-time in Charlotte. I'm an intern over there at MWR. I'm working 24/7 basically to put some plans together to go racing next year. And just, you know, living the dream or trying to live the dream right now, and it's been a very fun journey so far.
Now, what exactly are your duties as an intern for Michael Waltrip Racing? What do you do on a daily basis that's different from what you're used to?
I haven't had to get coffee as much as I thought I was going to. So they've been great to me over there. You know, MWR and everyone since the competition has been trying to do everything they can to keep me in the seat and keep me developing as a driver. And so basically I spend my time just a split between, you know, learning how they approach sponsors, how they talk to them, you know, the specific presentations and materials that they use to, you know, go out there and try to shop potential partners. And then I get to take all of that and try to apply it to what I'm doing. So, I mean, it's a great resource to be able to go lean on those guys and ask them questions of how the business side of the sport works and, you know, take it and try to apply it to what I'm doing. So definitely a change of pace from being in med school. You know, you don't have to go see patients and make rounds in the hospitals and things like that, but it's definitely equally challenging. I mean, you know, you have to go cure somebody from a disease or sell sponsorship for a race car. They're both pretty hard things to do.
Now, as most people know, you graduated from Harvard University with an astonishing GPA. How close were you to giving up on your racing dreams and just focusing on becoming a doctor?
I would say, you know, up until this whole competition and everything took place last year, that was my main focus, and that's, you know, where I was 100% heading in that direction. I still race, you know, my late model all the time. I'm actually trying to get down to Florida next week to go drive my car again. It's been a while since I've been in the late model, but everything was full speed ahead in that direction. You know, I'm sure, like you guys know, competing in NASCAR and being on this high of a level is so expensive, and it's so hard to do unless, you know, you've made the right introductions, you know the right people, and have that kind of backing. And, you know, that was something that was always a dream for me, and it just never really seemed, you know, that it would come together. And once the opportunity was there and I've been able to capitalize on some of the chances I've gotten so far, everything kind of flipped upside down, and now this is, you know, this is what I'm shooting for.
Well, that's great. It looks like you're doing a lot of great things lately, and you should be very proud of that. Now, I'm going to let our panel ask you a few questions, and we're going to start with Kyle Magro.
Hey, Patrick, it's Kyle. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, Kyle, I'm good, man. Thank you for messaging me today. Nice to hear from you.
Not a problem, Patrick. Thanks for coming on. My question for you is that you went to Harvard. I mean, what's it like being a student there, and is it any different from just being the typical college student?
I think there's a lot of things that make it a very different place to go to school. The first thing was, you know, I was born and raised in Florida, and it's 70 degrees, you know, the entire year, like year round. And going up to Boston, that was the first time I ever saw snow in my entire life. So most of the time I was about 10 layers deep in jackets freezing my butt off. But you know, as far as the school, what was so cool about the experience is, you know, that kind of place, it attracts people from all around the world. And I had four roommates. One of them was from Guatemala, one was from Canada, one was from Japan, and the other one was from Pennsylvania. And it's just a crazy, you know, mixture of cultures and learning about different ways of life and everything like that. And you just, you know, you learn more outside of the classroom than you did actually sitting in it. And so that's what made that such a cool experience. And, you know, it was definitely cool getting to show those guys what NASCAR is, because there's not a whole lot of people up there that follow the sport or ever really heard of it before. So, you know, the more I race and they followed everything that's happened since then, you know, I think I turned a couple new fans onto the sport.
And going to the racing side, you had the time with Bill McAnally Racing late last season and then early this season in the K&N Series. And, of course, picking up that win at Irwindale, what were you feeling after you crossed the checkered flag?
I think I was feeling pretty numb at that point. I couldn't believe it, man. I was so overwhelmed and excited. And, you know, it was the culmination of years and years of work. I mean, people see, you know, it happened relatively quickly. We won. That was my fifth start, I think, in the K&N stuff. And it happened pretty fast, but I've been racing, you know, for over 10 years before that. And, you know, up until that point, it was all, you know, family-run stuff. It was me, my dad, my best friend. We worked so hard for so many years. And to finally get a chance with a great team like that. And we had great runs, you know, at Daytona, at Bristol earlier this year, and just, you know, one factor or another led to us not getting to victory lane, and everything came together perfectly at Irwindale. We saved the tires, we made the move at just the right time, we kept the other fast guys, you know, behind us the whole race when we were playing strategy, and, you know, the stars definitely aligned that night, and, you know, I'll remember it for the rest of my life. That was one of the coolest moments ever.
Patrick, the Peak Stock Car Dream Challenge, we just saw Christian Pahud win in his K&N West debut, also the winner of this year's challenge. Did you help any of this year's finalists at all?
Yeah, I got to be part of the second round of the Peak Challenge this year. I was sort of a guest judge and more, I guess, just a leaning post for some of the drivers and stuff over the course of 3 days. So I got to meet everybody there. They picked a great pool of competitors this year to go into that Peak thing. And obviously, you know, Christian impressed. He did a great job going out there and winning that race was very impressive. And, you know, I couldn't be happier for him because I know exactly, you know, what it feels like and what must have been going through his head before that race started and what it feels like to win one of them. So really happy that 2 years in a row, Brian Emmerich and everybody at Peak put something together that produced two people who I think can actually, you know, I'm obviously biased, but, you know, could go really far in this sport and otherwise wouldn't have had the opportunity. And, you know, obviously it being Roseville and Bill McAnally's home track, he takes a lot of pride in that place. So it was really cool to see him get a win there too.
One more question for you, Patrick. 7 career K&N races. What track presented the biggest challenge to you?
Let's see. I'm probably hands down, it would have been Bristol. Once I got it figured out, that was the coolest place on earth to race. I mean, there's nothing else like it. But for the first, you know, two practice sessions, the first day that we were there, I was just completely lost. I mean, with that much banking at that track, you drive into the corner so much deeper than any other short track in the country, and you pick up the throttle way, way, way before the center. It just messes with your mind how much, you know, a car can stick in a corner with that much banking. And it took a while to figure it out. I mean, honestly, I struggled for the first 10 or 15 laps of the race, just trying to get my bearings straight. And then I think once I was around other cars enough and kind of picked up that rhythm, I mean, we started the race in 26th place, and we ended up finishing 6th. And we were right there battling with the guys in the top 5 by the end. So I learned pretty quickly, but it was definitely, you know, the most challenging place to get a hold of.
Yeah, well, thank you for answering my questions, Patrick. Thank you for coming on tonight, and I'll give it off to the rest of the guys.
No problem, bud. Great chatting with you.
All right, well, I guess I'm next. So I have two questions for you. First one is, you know, when you do make your NASCAR debate, is there one, or your NASCAR National Top 3 Series debate, which track would you like to make your debate at?
Which cup track would I want to make my debut at? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
That's a good question. Well, I already got some seat time at Bristol, so that probably wouldn't be a bad choice. My all-time favorite cup track would be a toss-up between Atlanta and Martinsville. And I actually just got to go to Martinsville this past weekend, see it for the first time. That's such a cool racetrack. It's one of the raciest ones on the circuit, and I feel like the driver has a whole lot to do with the outcome there. And obviously, it being a short track, it'd probably be a little bit more comfortable to make my first start. But then you look at Atlanta, that place is bad fast, and it's a mile and a half, and they still slide around on it like it's a short track. So one of those two, probably.
And my next one is, what was it like? You know, you're still a young driver, but what was it like already what was it like to already be working with other younger drivers to get them up in the seat more and give them advice and such during the peak stock car dream challenge during the second year around?
Yeah, it was definitely, you know, shoe on a different foot pretty quick. I haven't really had a whole lot of experience in my career with mentoring drivers that are younger than me. I mean, everything, you know, that I've done up to that point has kind of just been focusing on me develop. So it was really cool to kind of step on the other side of things and be able to kind of, you know, look at some drivers, give them advice, and you know, appreciate that feedback and that interaction back and forth. So I'm not sure if I'm too good at it. You'd have to call up the guys that were in the peak thing this year and see if my advice was worth anything at all. But, you know, it's definitely less pressure of a situation, but I would have rather been behind the wheel if I could have been.
All right, now I'm going to throw it over to the next person.
Cool.
All right, then I guess that's me. Well, I think we have, like, two questions. First of all, what was it like to be on that show that you won?
You know, my entire life, I never really watched reality TV shows. I never got into them. And I always thought, wow, that'd be a cold day in hell if I actually would end up on a reality TV show. And I ended up, you know, we won the peak thing. And so looking back on it, it's just a whole crazy set of circumstances that ended up being on there. You know, we had to put a minute and a half video on YouTube saying why Peak and Michael Waltrip Racing should pick us. And you go there and there's cameras everywhere and they're trying to throw makeup on you before you get in a race car, which is the strangest series of events that I think any race car driver could go through. But it was, I mean, the whole thing was just surreal. And everything since then has been too. You know, you can lean on some of the best people in the sport for advice. You know, they had Clint Bowyer there, Michael Waltrip, Danica Patrick teaching you how to do commercials. And, you know, the whole thing's like you just fell asleep and you were dreaming. It was really cool.
Amazing. Now you know that right now you're in the Canon Pro Series, but as you go up the ladder, which driver have you looked up to the most for advice or you know, who was like your star growing up?
Growing up, I guess I'll still admit it. I'm a diehard Jeff Gordon fan. I think a lot of race car drivers my age were all very young when Jeff first broke into the sport and made such a huge impact. And, you know, not only did he go out on the track and dominate, but he took NASCAR and brought it into the mainstream and made it as popular as it was today. So I think any kid who wanted to be a race car driver growing up during that time definitely looked up to Jeff. And now that he's a veteran, you can kind of look at a lot of the things that he does in a race car and really admire them. I mean, I think there's only a couple guys out there that going back to a track like Atlanta, for example, when, you know, it's the middle of the day and the track's greasy and it's a long run, and someone who could take care of their car and manage their tires. And that's something that I've always tried to pay attention to in my driving, and I think it paid dividends, you know, in the K&N stuff this year when we run 150 laps with no pit stops. So somebody like him who is so good for the sport outside the car and in the car, you know, I'll be a Gordon fan for a long time to come.
That's awesome. I'm a Gordon fan, too, through and through. All right.
Good.
Thank you very much.
I picked the right answer.
Yes, you did. All right, thank you.
All right, Patrick, I just have a few more questions for you before I let you go. What did it mean to you to get a few additional races this year after winning the contest last year?
I think it was huge. I mean, there was, even after I went out in the first race that I had after the challenge and got a top five, and you know, Bill was very nice and it was fortunate that I got a second opportunity with him last year when we finished sixth. There was still a lot of, I guess, questions about, you know, could this go anywhere? What can this turn into? You know, they had just done the competition. It was successful, but really, could you launch a career off of it, I think is what the biggest question was. And, you know, Peak got behind me, and they gave me the five races this year that were all very big, high-exposure races, and really put me, I guess, another notch up from where I was after just winning the competition. So, you know, it meant everything to get those chances, and to get the win out at Irwindale, I think, sealed the deal and really put me in the position that I am now. And even though next year's very uncertain at this point and I'm working my butt off on it, I'm definitely in a better spot now that they gave me those extra races.
Now, I spoke to Christian Pejud after his win a few weeks ago, and he gave you a lot of credit for his victory. He said you helped him a lot, and he probably couldn't have done it without your experience of what happened during the first race that you had for Bill McInally and everyone involved. What does it mean to you to be someone a young man is going to for advice when you're a young man yourself?
Yeah, it's pretty cool that he said all that. You know, Christian's, he's a great kid. He's obviously very talented, and he definitely went out there and proved it. But, you know, off the top of my head, I don't remember how old he is, but I'm pretty sure he's about the same age as me. So it's, you know, it's cool that you can lean on each other like that. And I'm sure, you know, he's run late models up here in North Carolina. If I ever brought my car up here, I'd probably lean on him for advice when it comes to some home track stuff. So it's, you know, it's really cool that we both got to this level that we're at from, you know, just a reality TV show, basically. It's pretty unbelievable.
With all the tension that's been going on with you and Christian throughout the last year and a half or so, has all this been overwhelming for you in any way?
I think the good parts of it were definitely not overwhelming. I mean, they're welcomed. It's been every good thing that's happened has been really awesome. It's been trying to figure out how to take all the good stuff that happened and package it in the right way, and whether you're talking to race teams or potential sponsors, you know, taking that and convincing them to go racing. And so that's the hardest part. I guess the overwhelming thing is just there's a million possibilities out there and a million ways to take this, and finding the right opportunity at the right time is definitely, you know, proven to be difficult. But yeah, I've had some pretty rough challenges before, whether it's, you know, been a test at school or something like that. So I feel, you know, well equipped to kind of make this happen and make my dreams stay alive. And, you know, that's what I'm working on right now.
Well, although you're still going to med school at the University of Miami, which is one of the rather more prestigious programs in the country, would you be willing to put that on hold instead of going for residency or something like that if you can get a chance to race full-time in NASCAR?
At this point, I mean, absolutely. You know, I've been talking with my school. They've been great with me the entire year, basically giving me, you know, kind of the space that I need to pursue, you know, this opportunity and my dream. And, you know, I'm really thankful to them for that. We've had some discussions looking at next year, depending how things fall into place, about if I'll be able to take some additional time off. And, you know, medicine is an incredible field. I've loved every second that I've gotten to spend, you know, learning how to become a physician. I have no doubt in my mind that one day that's where my path can take me, whether that's, you know, sooner or later. So I consider myself fortunate that I'm being able to do two things that I'm really passionate about in my life. But definitely, you know, the racing has a timer, has a stopwatch on it, and I know it's now or never to make it happen. So
you'll become a doctor, which it seems like you will eventually. What kind of doctor would you want to become?
I'm really interested in ophthalmology, so just eye surgeon kind of guy. And I also like neurology. It's what I majored in college, you know, all the neurons and all that stuff in your brain, how you think, how the world works. Were all really fascinating topics to me. And once I got exposed to them in med school, I've spent some time shadowing some doctors and doing some research in those fields. And, you know, it's really cool even in the race car when you think about how you think and interpret setups and how, you know, you look at competition and things like that and how that all goes on with the biology in your head. So I guess I'm a little unique in that I see things kind of through that lens or whatever, but that's where I see myself going.
Well, that's pretty impressive. Now I know who to go to when I have a headache or something like that.
There you go. I got you covered.
Now, Michael Waltrip has been a giant influence on you, obviously. What's your relationship been like with him?
Well, the last couple months, there hasn't been a whole lot of relationship because he's gone dancing like crazy. Have you guys been watching Dancing with the Stars?
Yeah,
somewhat.
It's very interesting to watch that.
He has a very different approach than most of the contestants on the show. Would you agree?
Oh, it's just to say the least.
Yeah.
Definitely.
No, I mean, he's been, it's pretty incredible how far he's been able to get in that show. And I think it says a lot about, you know, NASCAR Nation voting for him every single week and getting support from people like, you know, Dale Jr., Jimmy Johnson tweeting out for him. And really, what a strong fan base we have, not just when it comes to racing, but to other stuff. But, you know, Michael was a great asset. My first two K&N races I ran, he was in both of those. So I was able to lean on him for advice, you know, all the time. And then obviously when I was trying to move up to Charlotte and make a real go at this racing, you know, they opened the doors at MWR for me to come work there. So really I owe a lot, to Michael and really the whole organization that they kind of took me in a little bit and helped me continue as their development driver.
Now, just for the heck of it, I'm going to throw this out there. Do you want to go on Dancing with the Stars with him? I know you want to dance with him at least once.
I don't know about dancing with him, but I might consider going on Dancing with the Stars if I could dance with his partner. Because she seems like a great person to learn from, am I right?
Yeah, that's true. I see him every day.
I'll put my application
Instagram
in for that. Hey, I have to win a couple Daytona 500s first to get an invite, I guess.
All right, just a couple, not one. We're setting the standard high for you.
We're setting the standard up there, yeah.
Now, before we let you go, is there anyone you want to give a shout-out to or thank?
It's the usual cast of characters. You know, huge thank you to Brian Emmerich and Peak, Michael Waltrip, Ty Norris, everyone at MWR. They've given me all the tools and everything necessary to get my name out there this year. And hopefully here in the next couple of weeks, we'll solidify our plans for 2015. So everybody keep checking in. You can follow me at 97 Patrick Star, just like the character from SpongeBob, his best friend. That's the Twitter handle, 97 Patrick Star on Twitter, on Instagram, got an athlete page on Facebook. So definitely hoping to announce some really exciting news in the next couple weeks. So everybody stay tuned and see what happens next.
Thank you so much, Patrick. We really appreciate it. We look forward to having you on once again in a few weeks.
All right, sounds good. I'll let you guys know what happens, and I look forward to being back on. Thank you for having me on tonight.
It sounds good. Have a good one.
All right, cool. Take care, guys. Have a good night.
See you. That was Patrick Star Poli, everyone. Now, I'm going to throw it back to Mr. Brett Hurley over here.
Brett Hurley?
Brett, are you there?
Well,
are you watching the game? Are you watching the game?
No, I'm here. I was getting my racing reference page back up because it wasn't showing all the running order. But anyway. Now that I got that,
you should memorize that with all your secret programs.
Joseph, anyway, before I kill NASCAR Joe over there, we're going to resume our Martinsville race review talk as Dale Earnhardt Jr. captured a victory after leading 79 laps. The driver that finished in second was Jeff Gordon, who led 130, came just shy of scoring a victory. And, you know, as we talked about last week on this show, of how previous race winners have all been chase drivers, but finally we got someone where it was not a chase driver situation. And, you know, kind of stole the show from them. But anyway, we already went to Glenn to give us his thoughts, so I'm going to throw it over to Joseph to give us his.
Yeah, the cup race was very exciting. Oh, my gosh. I still can't even get over the fact that Dale Earnhardt Jr. won that race after Jeff Gordon dominated. And just everything that happened in the race was incredible. You had Jamie McMurray leading at one point. You had Kurt Busch up there. Denny Hamlin was leading laps. Clint Bowyer. It was such an amazing race to watch. You even had Matt Kenseth up there, who's been struggling as of late. So it was great to see everyone up there battling for a win. And then what can you say about Ryan Newman? He came from the 15th position all day long, then got that speeding penalty with Jeff Gordon, mind you, and they ended up coming through the field within 120 laps only, and they finished second and third. So it was an incredible run for both of them. But what else can you say about Dale Earnhardt Jr.? He really showed so much emotion throughout that victory. And to be honest with you, I can't think of anyone else that deserved a victory like he did after having his heart broken at Talladega, where he was expected to compete for the win and did so until late in the race.
Good point. And Kyle.
Yeah, definitely a good win for Dale Jr. I know he's always won the grandfather clock from there. So his dad has one as well, as many. So a good win for Dale Jr. And it wasn't easy, though. He had to earn it. I mean, I didn't think anybody would have pitted on that last caution, but I've only seen it work once before coming in late. I think it was March of 2010 when Denny Hamlin, I think he restarted eighth, and just absolute chaos in the front and took the lead with two laps to go and won the race. So it has been done before, and then Sunday showed that it was done a second time. Another shout-out I want to give is Tony Stewart. Ran inside the top five, top ten all day. Stayed on that last caution, and he said in his post-race interview he would have did it all over again and wound up coming home fourth, tying his best finish of the season, which was, I think it was at Bristol in March. So good run for that team. So I think that 14 team may be knocking on the door of victory lane in these next 3 weeks. And also, like you guys said, Ryan Newman still not out of way on this season yet, and RCR cars have been lacking some horsepower, but they have been getting better. And, you know, it's good to see Ryan Newman running these two good weeks at Talladega and now at Martinsville finishing third. So still have two winless drivers left in the chase in Matt Kenseth and Ryan Newman. So it's going to be absolute chaos going into Texas. I mean, another driver I want to bring up, I thought he was like a shot at winning, it was Denny Hamlin. He's been so good at that track, and then falling a little bit toward the end, that kind of hurt him. And I know he had all his laps, but he pretty much had fresher tires than Jeff Gordon at the time. And then when they all got back on sequence, I don't think that 11 really had the speed it had early on. And it was pretty much a race between the 88 and the 24. And, you know, just like Joseph said, with Ryan Newman and Jeff Gordon working their way back up through the field, because I think the 24 are the best car all day. And started 13th and just worked his way right up to the front. And I think right now, when you look at the competition, I think the 24 is probably the best out there right now. I've shown to be on all kind of tracks. And, of course, you still have Kevin Harvick and Brad Keselowski, who had bad days. And they may need a win either at Texas or Phoenix. And those are both good tracks, especially Phoenix for Harvick. And Brad Keselowski has run well at Texas, especially with his teammate Joey Logano winning in the spring. So definitely going to need some good runs out of those two teams this week. And I think it might be an all or nothing situation for the 2 and the 4 winning, trying to win a race either at Phoenix or Texas.
And now we're going to head into our Texas Motor Speedway preview, where the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series, the NASCAR Nationwide Series, and the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series will be racing at this weekend. And, you know, I think this weekend's definitely going to be dominated by the Penske cars. You know, they were fast there previously, the last couple of years. I think they're going to be strong. So I'm going to turn it over to you boys and kind of give us your thoughts and predictions on this weekend's race.
Yeah, Jeff Gordon. How can you go against Jeff Gordon? He's been doing so incredible this year. He's running in the top 5 every single week. He ran very well at Phoenix and Texas, so I wouldn't be surprised if he goes out there and locks himself into the final round of the chase at Homestead with the win at Texas this weekend. He has an incredible track record there over the past few years. However, he does have a couple of bad races, and those have happened over the past 2 years. So it's either all or nothing for Jeff Gordon, but I'm going with the all. I think that there are going to be certain drivers that you're going to expect to do well, like Brad Keselowski or Joey Logano, who have excelled by far to anyone's expectations this year on the intermediate tracks. Joey Logano won the Texas race back in April. I would not be surprised if he pulls off the Texas sweep, even though history says that's very unlikely. But if not him, who knows? Brad Keselowski coming off that terrible race where he had some awful luck, he has to win. There's no option for him anymore. He has to get a victory this weekend if he wants to advance to the final round of chase. The same thing for Kevin Harvick. Both drivers have been incredible this year, every single type of track you go to. So it's going to come down to one of those three drivers, I think. But then, once again, you have a guy like Dale Earnhardt Jr. who could come out of nowhere. You saw Tony Stewart, as Kyle pointed out. He had his best race of the year at Martinsville. He even led 18 laps. The first time he's led during a green flag period in a long time. So you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if he comes out there and tries to contend for a win. Not to mention a guy like Kyle Busch or Greg Biffle, who both have decent track records at Texas. So it's going to be an amazing race to watch.
And we're going to throw it over to Glenn.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what can we say about Texas except that this is a brilliant track. In fact, I don't think that comparing this with Atlanta and Charlotte, this is kind of the shorter version of those particular racetracks. And it doesn't matter what series is on there. It could be, you know, the Truck Series Nationwide, IndyCar Cup. They always put on a great show at the Wild Asphalt Circus. And you mentioned Jeff Gordon. Yes, he's definitely on a hot streak right now. And this is a must-win deal. In fact, I think that if Gordon comes away with, you know, a big win here, that is going to assure him a spot in the Homestead race. But also another driver that I do want to say that will do well, that you guys failed to bring up, Kevin Harvick. Harvick knows how to get around here. And, yes, in the spring race, Harvick, I don't believe Harvick had such a good finish, but the last couple of years we've been here, Harvick has been up there in the top 10. And another driver, how about Dale Earnhardt Jr.? I mean, Jr. does pretty well here in Texas, too. He could pull off another win and go back-to-back. I mean, that would be amazing, and I think it's kind of a long shot, but you definitely can't count out the double-eight National Guard car and that Outback Steakhouse number 4 car.
All right, and some good stuff. I think it's going to be an awesome weekend, and SpeedwayDigest.com will certainly keep you covered throughout. So, all right, our next news item we're going to dig back into, those is McKenna Bell getting NASCAR Nationwide Series an opportunity at the Phoenix International Raceway next week on November 8th. And I'm going to start off with Joseph to give us his thoughts.
Yeah, McKenna Bell is going to run with Rick Ware Racing. And it's very, very interesting to see what she's doing. She's, in my opinion at least, she's basically begging for money. I don't
disagree with the help that she should be doing this, but at the same time, it's just kind of ridiculous in a way that a driver of one top 10 in the K&N E-Series with full sponsorship, mind you, is going to be racing a Nationwide race. I think that this, if anyone deserves a ride in the Nationwide Series from the K&N Pro Series East, it has to be Kenzie Rustin. She has been incredible in the limited funding equipment that she has, albeit it's good equipment, especially compared to McKenna Bell's. But even so, she has performed so awful in rev racing equipment, equipment she's in this year, which is different, but she still has a lot of equipment. In fact, part of the thing that she's doing to raise money, quote-unquote, for her Nationwide gig is to have a family golf tournament. And instead of donating the money to charity, it's, quote-unquote, once again, a chance for businesses and individuals in Carson City to get behind of one of their own and help her achieve her dreams. If you want to help, you can donate via PayPal or the account set up at the City National Bank branch. And they even give you the address and phone number and bank account number and the routing account number. I find that very ridiculous. No one should have to go to those standards. Clearly, if you're not good enough to race, you're not going to get the sponsorship to do so. And for those who don't know, Rick Ware Racing is a respectable team. They're a multi-car operation in the Nationwide Series. They run the 87 and the 23. And they run about 25th on a weekly basis on a decent week. They've run of Timmy Hill and other drivers like that, just giving them experience. This weekend, Robert Richardson will be in the car. But the fact that McKenna Bell is even doing this is pretty astonishing to me. And I'm curious to see what you guys think about it, especially Kyle.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what we're going to see with McKenna Bell at Phoenix. It's going to be kind of interesting because, you know, we've seen so many drivers with Rick Ware Racing this year, even, you know, with Cody Ware as well, I think Rick's son. So there's been a lot of people behind the wheel. You know, with Kenzie Rushton just going to that topic, she's done a great job this year, finishing runner-up at Iowa. And then, of course, you know, having some sponsors helping her team, her Ben Kennedy Racing team, and not really sure what she's going to do come 2015, you know, with Kaz Grawla going to be running that number 96 car in the K&N E-Series. So, I mean, I don't know what's next for Kenzie Rustin or even McKenna Bell. You know, both her and Kenzie Rustin, both competitors full-time in the K&N E-Series. And they've shown some good runs over their years. So it's still a lot to go through this next year or so and in the end of the season as well. And I'm not sure when we'll see Kenzie Rustin in a top-tier ride in any of the three series. I'm not sure when that'll happen, but, you know, I wish the best for her, and I also wish the best for McKenna Bell as well come next Saturday at Phoenix.
Blaine?
You know, I don't know much about McKenna Bell, but we'll see what happens with her. I mean, the only problem here is that obviously she needs funding. So that's gonna be a slightly tough road, but we'll see if anybody out there will give her some sponsorship to race the Phoenix.
All right, and we're going to start talking about our last topic of the night before we hand it off to Glenn for his opening little report. As Brennan Gaughan announced last week that he will return with Richard Childress Racing to drive the number 62 South Point Hotel Casino Chevrolet, and I forgot the number, but anyway, I want to start off with Glenn to give us his thoughts.
See, Brendan Gaughan back again in truck 62. I mean, Brendan Gaughan is a good driver, and up until his last win, nobody really knew if he was going to win again or not. But sure enough, you know, he pulled out the victory, and he's definitely. Right now in the truck series, he's basically RC's best shot at a win. Not taking anything away from from Ty Dillon, but I have a feeling that next year, Ty is already in the Nationwide Series. What am I saying? Pretty much, Gon is Childress's best shot at anything in 2015, truck-wise.
Kyle.
Yeah, that's a good move for Brendan Gaughan, being back in the NASCAR Nationwide Series for sure. You had all that. Actually, with that part-time deal he had with Richard Childress Racing on the trucks, I really think that propelled his career and brought it back to where it was about 10 years ago when he was running for his family team and competing for the 2003 NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series Championship. So I really think this year has been a shot in the arm for Brendan Gaughan. 2 wins this year at Road America and then at Kentucky. And you could say all you want about him getting the win at Road America. It was rain, but he earned Kentucky. He won that race. He had one of the best cars, started out early in the race, and then he wound up finishing the deal with only about 4, 5, or 6 laps to go. So I think that's a great move for Gaughan, going back to Richard Childress Racing. He said that toward the end of his career, and I'm not saying it is, but he said later in his career he wanted to be with a good team, and now he is. Richard Childress Racing, of course, like you guys said, the Truck Series, having a few chances to win. At least the one that I remember was Chicagoland in 2012, running that number 2 truck that ran the whole season with a variety of drivers and finishing second that day to James Buescher. So I hope he can do better, even better next year. I think that team can get the consistency to go as well, and of course you'll have his teammates as well Xfinity Series. I correct myself there. So I think, you know, good move for that team, and, you know, and it's a good pairing with him and Shane Wilson. They've always had success, especially in the trucks, and, of course, it will be the Xfinity Series come 2015.
And Yosef.
It's Yosef, actually, or Yossi. But, yeah, Brendan Gaughan told me last winter, that if he doesn't win a Nationwide race this year, he's probably going to call it quits. And guess what he did? Not only did he win 1 Nationwide race, he won 2. So I'm very impressed with Brendan Gaughan this year. I think next year, if he keeps racing the way he is, there's no reason why he can't run in the top 5 in points. He did struggle a little bit at the beginning of the year, just getting used to running full-time in the Nationwide Series again after a 22-race truck series schedule compared to 33 Nationwide. But the fact that he's re-signing with RCR is definitely a good thing. And I wouldn't be surprised if he contends for wins on a weekly basis in the Xfinity Series next year. He's going to be a very competitive driver. He's in top-notch equipment. And RCR's going to have a lot of resources focused on Brendan Gaughan now that they see, oh, he's not just here to race in the top 10. He's here to actually win, which probably came by surprise for most people, especially when he won that road course race. Let me tell you, when I saw that, I texted him and I told him, congratulations. This is flat out incredible what you did. He's like, I didn't even know I was that good on road courses, especially in the rain. So it goes to show you, you never know what can happen in the Nationwide Series. And we need a lot more experienced drivers like Brendan Gaughan to give those young rookies, which we've seen so many of this year, a little experience to go off of, you know what I mean? So overall, it's a good move, and he's not going to go back in the Sprint Cup Series. That's what he told me. But he wants to do whatever Richard Childress wants him to do, and that's going to go out and contending for a Nationwide Championship. So I think he'll be able to be top 5 next year.
All right. Some good stuff. And now I'm going to send it over to Glenn for his open mill reports. Take it away, Glenn.
All right. Thank you very much, Brett. And this open mill report has some good news, some sad news, some interesting news, and even a little bit of bizarre news. So let's start things off with the sad news and get that out of the way. The sad news is about the two bottom teams right now in F1, Caterham and Marussia. Unfortunately, they will not be racing in this weekend's United States Grand Prix, as both teams seek solutions to their ongoing financial issues. And the former has gone into administration back on Monday. And it started with Caterham basically having their shops padlocked, and so the employees couldn't get in, and so they ended up having to be dropped from the grid. And then about 2 days later, Marussia ends up announcing that they won't be on the grid, which means that for the grid, for the United States GP, there is going to be only 18 cars. The last time we had 18 cars on the grid was back at Monaco in 2005. Now, there is a thing in the contract that says that teams could also add a third car to a race, but they have to have 60 days advance notice to get that ready. They can also provide a spare car for, you know, struggling teams, but that won't be happening. And as we all know, both Marussia and Caterham joined the Formula One grid in 2010, originally known as the Virgin and Lotus Racing teams, respectively. Both have enjoyed only limited success, with Marussia securing their first World Championship points in this year's Monaco GP. And unfortunately, Caterham has yet to score any points in any of their races that they have been in. So we'll see what happens with these two teams. Hopefully they can make it to the grid for 2015. And speaking of that, the F1 series is back in action this weekend. They're going to Austin, Texas for the running of the Circuit of the Americas or the 2014 Formula One United States Grand Prix. This 20-turn road course has been really, really fun. And it's been getting still a bunch of praise from everybody, and it's still a really fun track. There are two DRS detection points and activation zones. The first detection point is actually going to be out of turn number 10, and as you go down the back straightaway that links turn 11 to turn 12, there's an activation zone with a speed trap just before you get to turn number 12. And then activation point number 2 comes outside of turn 19 as you go on the front straightaway to make the hill climb up to turn number 1. 56 laps will make up the running for this race, and the track record was set by Sebastian Vettel last year in 2012 at a 139.347. So, and actually, there's another story about Sebastian Vettel. He's using his sixth power unit, a.k.a. engine. And because of this, he will have to take a penalty, which means he will start the race from pit road and will not be participating in qualifying. So he will start last on the grid and start the race from pit road. And so we'll see if he can climb up through the field and get himself up there. Now I move over to the IndyCar Series, where some major happenings have taken place. First of all, today, AJ Foyt Racing signed Jack Hosworth and Takuma Sato for their cars, so they'll go to a two-car team. Takuma Sato will stay in the 14 car, and Jack Hosworth will race car 41. Meanwhile, the 2015 Verizon IndyCar Series schedule is set to come out tomorrow at 11 a.m. Pacific time. Now, I have a rough draft of the schedule in front of me, so let's go down this schedule and see where everything is. There's a total, looks like there's going to be a total of this that will stretch from March to August. So let's start with the races that are definitely confirmed. As of right now, March 8th, we will find the IndyCar Series going to Brasilia to run at the Autodromo de Nelson Piquet to start the season. March 29th, it's the Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg. That's race number 2. Race number 3 is on the brand new track, the New Orleans track, the NOLA Motorsports Park, race for the Grand Prix of Louisiana on April 12th, and then it's the Toyota Grand Prix of Long Beach on April 19th. On April 26th, this will be race number 5. This is the Honda Indy Grand Prix of Alabama, so it gets moved moved up a week. And then the month of May will be at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for the running of the Andy's List Grand Prix of Indianapolis on May 9th. And then on May 24th, it's the 99th running of the Indianapolis 500. May 30th and 31st, go to the Chevrolet Detroit Belle Isle GP. It's the only doubleheader of this year as of right now. And then we head to Fort Worth, Texas, which we're about to do a Cup Series race there, on June 6th. Now, here comes some of the races that are not confirmed yet, but will be tomorrow. Toronto is back on the schedule. Here's what's going on. Instead of doing the race in July and going to Canadian Tire Motorsports Park, Toronto made the agreement to go ahead and hold the race in Toronto a month earlier. So it looks like the projected dates are going to be June 14th and 15th. Not sure if that'll be a doubleheader or if it's going to be a single race. We'll find out later on. Then on June 27th, it's off to Fontana, the Auto Club Speedway race for the MAPTV American Real 500. Now, going into July, it looks like there's two races. July 12th looks like it's going to be Pocono, which is in its last year of its three-year deal with IndyCar. And then July 19th looks like it's going to be Iowa for the Iowa Indy Corn 300. And then on August 2nd, Mid-Ohio is expected to take that spot, but it's not been confirmed yet. August 23rd is possibly the Milwaukee Mile. That has not been confirmed yet, but the last track that's been confirmed, August 30th, we will wrap up the championship season at Sonoma. So this is a pool. Now, a lot of people are asking, you know, why are we ending the schedule on a road course and not at Fontana? Well, here's the problem. The Auto Club Speedway did not like being on the late August date because, as we've seen, it gets pretty hot here, and August in California, it's our hottest month. I mean, it's cool at you know, 92 or something like that. Now that we've moved the race to June, what this is that it starts to get hot, but the evenings still have a little bit of springiness or a little bit of spring in them. So the evenings are going to be just fine. No word yet on if the MAPTV American Real 500 will be a day race or if they're going to keep it as a night race. Same deal with Sonoma. They could go to a night race or they could go to a or they could stick with the day race. So we'll see what happens tomorrow at 11 a.m. Pacific time. So make sure you keep your fingers tuned to Twitter and your eyes as well. And also to wrap things up, Conquest Racing is set to go back into the Super Tire Indy Lights series of IndyCar to go race in the American Le Mans series, which is now the United Sports Car deal. And so Conquest joins Indy Lights Titans Smith Pearson Motorsports, who are the defending champions, Velarde Racing, and H-Star Motorsports, among those who publicly committed to the series. More team announcements are expected in the coming days and weeks. So that's your look at the series. Oh, yeah, that's right. I almost forgot. I don't know who listens to our show internationally, but if you guys want to know what time the United States Grand Prix begins, here is a small list of you know, different countries and actually what time you guys can check it out. So if you live in Austin, Texas, obviously it's going to start at 2 p.m. local time, which is 11 o'clock Pacific. If you live in Sao Paulo, Brazil, hola, you guys will get to see the race at 6 p.m. So you might want to make a dinner plan for that to check it out. If you live in Britain or Portugal, you will be watching the race at 8 p.m., and, of course, Western Europe will see it at 9 p.m. And if you live in New Delhi, then you will be watching it at 1:30 a.m. in the morning Monday. Eastern Asia will get it at 4 a.m. Monday. Melbourne, Australia will be at 7 a.m. Monday. And if you live in New Zealand, then you have a morning Monday race. Cure your hangover of the Monday at 9 a.m. So you definitely want to check it out. You definitely want to check out this race to see if Lewis Hamilton can continue his tear on the season or if Nico Rosberg can come in and win it. And with that, we are done with the show tonight. And thank you all for tuning in. And, of course, you could follow us on Twitter. I am at IndyCarGL2048 on Twitter and also on Facebook as well. And we'll see you guys at the next show where we will wrap up Texas. We'll look at Phoenix, see who's in, who's out, who's hot, who's not, and take a look ahead at some of the next couple of races. So from all of us to all of you, you've been listening to Speedway Digest here on BlogTalkRadio.com. Have a great weekend, everybody, and happy Halloween.